this week on The Inside Flap.
I knew I wanted to have the two seasons very clearly outlined there. So I started writing the summer seasons in the summer. You know, I went on my long walks with my dog and, you know, tried to really experience, you know, the heat of summer and hopefully translate that into my writing. And then when the weather changed, I went into the winter scenes. And thankfully, I guess, we had a really snowy winter.
Now, there's no place to park anywhere near.
It's a garage and you have to walk 2 blocks.
And keep in mind, I'm in shorts and a t-shirt still. And it is howling snow.
Are you remembering the time when you wanted to save $10 for the delivery?
Oh, yeah.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the room. You're waiting?
Yeah,
seated
I was waiting.
Across the room, as you hear right there.
I fell asleep a little bit.
Is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And on the couch to my left is with a hat on today.
Yeah, I've been staring at it.
Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Andrew needs a haircut, I think, as do you, Dave. Mm. Andrew has a curly lock right in the middle of his forehead.
Should I take the hat off? You guys want to see that?
No, I'm good. Here, I'm good.
I'm taking it off.
I'm super good. Thank you.
There's a reason.
Gosh,
there's a reason.
No.
There's a reason the hat was on. Yeah.
Welcome to the show. This is episode 154.
The Inside Flap
book podcast. Got a great show for you today. We're joined by Heather Gudenkauf, New York Times and USA Today best-selling author of 8 novels. Now listen to this. Her debut novel, The Weight of Silence, was an instant New York Times bestseller and stayed on the list for 22 weeks. Her new book, her new book is titled The Overnight Guest. Listen, Laura and I both read this book, loved it. It was just a riveting and instant classic thriller. Laura and I had a great time chatting with Heather, and we'll have that conversation for you in just a bit. But first, I want to give you guys a little update on the school situation. You know, I'm back pulling double duty at school once again as we are in the thick of building the set for our musical for the spring. We are doing Something Rotten, if you guys know that musical.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, you've heard of it?
Heard of it, yeah.
You have?
I have, yeah.
You have not?
Sure, Something Rotten.
What's it about?
I have no clue.
I haven't heard it. I hadn't heard of it. Really?
Sure. Yeah.
I doubt that.
I haven't heard of it.
I had not heard of this musical. But anyway, the kids were really excited about it. It's like set during, do you know when it's set?
Turn of the century.
Really?
Elizabethan times. So it is the turn of a century.
Turn of a century.
It's just 15th century or 16th century. You know, Shakespeare is a character in it.
And there's a fiddler that's on a roof in this one.
That's
too?
Right. Exactly. Yes. And he fiddles away and dreams about being a rich man. Mm-hmm. No, we got a fairly big build to do this one as we are building a replica of the Globe Theater on stage. So we're doing like interior. Yeah. I don't know whose idea that was.
Was that your idea?
Yeah, unfortunately, it was my idea.
Oh, so you have no one to blame.
So I have no one to blame about myself. But
that's good because it's your own fault.
Exactly. It'll be good. But we're building a lot of elevated platforms all over the place. And we're staying late on Wednesdays and we're working, you know, deep into the afternoon on Saturdays. But now, because we're working even later than we did last semester, now I have to order dinner for the kids on Wednesday and lunch on Saturday.
You didn't have to order, didn't you?
I don't know why, but no, we never ordered dinner last year.
You had
year.
Theater moms, though, didn't you?
Yeah, but that was once
for the full
that's
performance.
When we got to the full kids. Yeah, we're staying, I don't know, like an hour later. I don't know. Anyway, so it's the musical.
They do need dinner, yeah.
And I guess the tradition is that you stay later working on the musical, even though last year we did a lot more work. But I spent a lot of week weeknights.
I know you
they're
did.
Working,
yeah.
Which I'm trying to avoid this year. But anyway, the point is we gotta get him dinner. So the first late Wednesday we had, I was like, all right, guys, what do you want for dinner?
Oh, man.
And I don't know why I even bother asking. There are like 15 kids. And from half of them, I got, oh. And then the other half is like seven
ideas.
Different answers. A pizza, Chinese, Noodles and Company, Chipotle. So finally, I was like, you know what? We're getting Jimmy John's because I would like a nice sandwich.
Yeah, why don't you ask yourself what you want?
And I did, and I said, Jimmy John's.
Is Jimmy John's good? I have not eaten there in a long
Jimmy John's, they put out a good sub. Okay. They can do a good sub.
It's okay.
It's
okay.
Not bad. It's yeah. Not bad. We'll put okay. It that way. And they're fast, which is key. And there's one literally two blocks away from the school.
There's a lot of stuff two blocks away from your
extra
school.
Extra key because I would have sent... Well, here's the thing. I went to go pick up the meal, right? So
don't they deliver, though? I see their drivers all over town.
They do deliver, but I didn't want to pay the extra money for the delivery.
Are you personally paying, or are you...
No. The school was paying. I didn't want it to come out of our budget.
Oh,
since it's only two blocks away, I figured, well, I'll just go pick it up. No big deal. Easy peasy. So we all gather around the laptop. Everybody gets on. And it takes half an hour to order it because the kids are like, I want extra onions on mine, no pickles.
Oh, yeah.
It literally took a half an hour just for them to put in their order. And then the school credit card the theater credit card didn't work
because
I didn't know the zip code or the zip code wasn't put on. So I eventually put it on our credit card, which I did get reimbursed for, but it took forever. And then I go scurrying out of the auditorium.
$500 Jimmy John's meal.
Now, it's over $100. Now,
I believe it.
Many
people.
I think it was over one place we ordered one. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing is you can't order 15 meals at McDonald's for that price.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the auditorium, because the building is 100 years old and the heat is generated by radiators that are probably 110 years old, it is like 100, there's a lot of hundreds in this story, but it's like 119 degrees in the auditorium. It's so hot in there.
I hate that kind of heat.
So I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt. And I don't know what it's like outside, but I'm like, well, because I've been in there for 3.5 hours at this point. In the auditorium, windowless, of course. So I'm like, let me just go hop in my truck. I go out the door, and I am met, no lie, it is a blinding snowstorm out there.
Wow.
This is the one we had, I don't know if you remember, it was like 3 weeks ago.
I mean, there's been a snowstorm a week.
Howling wind, and the snow is coming in sideways. But I say to myself, self, no big deal. You just hop in your truck. It's two blocks away.
Yeah.
So I get in my truck, and I guess it's been snowing for a while because the roads are snow-packed. I take a right on Colfax, and I just come to a screeching halt because it is just brake lights as far as you can see. It's like 6:30. It's rush hour. The heart of the downtown area, Colfax Avenue. It takes me like 10 minutes to go these two blocks. I should have just run over there.
You could have walked, yeah.
I find a parking spot around the corner. I get out of my truck. Now, according to my truck, it's 19 degrees outside, snow blowing sideways. I run over to the Jimmy John's in my t-shirt and shorts, fly in the door, and it's empty in there. Oh, that's kind of weird. It's dinner rush, I would think, to be. But I guess people aren't. I think people get lunch at Jimmy John's, maybe not dinner. I don't know. So I go up to the counter. There's one guy in the place.
Oh,
and
no.
And it looks like he's not doing anything.
Yeah, and you placed a ton of orders.
I placed a huge order. I'm like...
I got a bad feeling about this.
Oh, I immediately had a bad feeling about this. I said, hey, what's up? I'm Dave. I placed an order for some Jimmy John's.
Well, and keep in mind, I mean, you've got like this COVID outbreak going on, right? So they're not staffed. Places aren't staffed.
Well, that's true. That's true. And I did, and I also had to, was wearing my mask. I placed a big order. The guy looks at me, he's like, I didn't get any order. I said, no, I spent a half an hour putting this order online. He's like, what store did it go to?
Oh, no.
Yeah, and that's what I knew. Something was wrong. I said, well... Clearly, it's not this one because you have no idea what
Dave.
I'm talking about. So I had to pull up my phone, and I found the confirmation email. And sure enough, it's the Jimmy John's that's on the 16th Street Mall.
Ooh.
The pedestrian mall.
Ooh.
Which is almost
so hard to get to.
Miles away, and it's a pedestrian mall. You can't park along the pedestrian mall.
And it's going to be busy.
Also, miles away in that type of traffic.
No, it just took me 10 minutes to go two blocks.
Oh.
But it's over $100 worth of food. So at this point, I have no choice.
No, you got to get it.
But to go get it. So hop in my truck. Takes me forever to get down there. Stop and go traffic all the way. Snow-packed roads. Then I get over there, and I'm following along on my maps. I see where it is.
Going into that area.
Now, there is no place to park anywhere near.
It's a garage, and you have to walk two blocks.
And keep in mind, I'm in shorts and a t-shirt still. And it is howling snow.
Are you remembering the time when you wanted to save $10 for the delivery?
Oh, yeah. Trust me. That is going through my mind. I park illegally two blocks away.
Did you ever consider calling the store and saying, hey, I changed my mind, I'll double the delivery charge?
No, because I figured it was already made. And, you know.
Yeah, but couldn't they just hop in their little Jimmy Jones?
You know, I should have. That is exactly what I should have done.
Yeah.
But I didn't because I'm dumb. So anyway, so I pull up and I'm wearing shorts, but I do have these, as you can see, I'm wearing them now, these lovely black socks. So in order to get a little insulation from the snow, I hike these black socks up to my knees. All right, I got a black t-shirt, I got black shorts, and I got these black socks. Aww. Now I want you to picture this. Down the 16th Street Mall, pedestrians all over the place. It's dark,
this
it's snowing,
awful.
It's 19 degrees, it's blowing wind, and picture me, I am sprinting. Because first of all, I need to get back to the kids. Second of all, I don't want to get a parking ticket. Third of all, I'm hungry.
And it's 19 degrees.
And it's 19 degrees. So I'm sprinting. Homeless people are staring at me with my socks hiked up. I get to the store, go in.
You looked like you were high.
Oh, yeah. And my hair, you know, my hair, because I've been sweating.
Like out of your mind
working
high.
Inside. My hair's, you know, all over the place. Jump in, get into the store. I'm like, yeah, you got to order Dave. The guy's like, yeah, we've been trying to call you. is something wrong with your phone? I'm like, what do you mean you've been trying to call me? He's like, yeah, we haven't put the order in. This is the first time you've ordered from us, and it was a big order, so we didn't know if it was real. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me.
This is why, Dave, this is why I always call.
You got
to
call.
I don't ever do the online. Call. I always call.
He's like.
Dave does not like to talk to people on the phone.
I don't. I absolutely don't. And this bit me in the ass.
I don't mind it at all. Shocker.
So the reality is there's these kids working in the store and they're thinking, man, that's 15 sandwiches. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Exactly,
you know,
right.
Because
yeah.
It's already paid for.
Yeah.
What do they care if somebody shows up to
that's
pick it up
great.
Or not?
That's a great point.
That's a really good point, Andrew.
So the guy's like, oh, we can make it for you. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're going to make it for me. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to watch you make it for me.
This is a disaster.
It's terrible. And the kids have all ordered fountain drinks also. So
I
got to make the fountain drinks.
How are you going to do that?
No. And, well, yeah, Jimmy John's. Now, I will give one little shout out to Jimmy John's is that they are freaky fast, as they say on the commercials. And again, this store also suspiciously not busy. They got the meal done very quickly, threw all the subs. They gave me a huge box and then like cartons for it. So I got everything wedged. I got all these fountain drinks wedged into this box. And then I leave the store and I just book it down the 16th Street Mall.
Did you spill
with this
any...
huge box? There were some napkins that went flying out of it.
Did you spill any soda?
Some soda was spilled on some sandwiches. Yes, that did happen.
Wow. How long were you in the Jimmy John's for?
I don't know. Probably like 10 minutes.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Maybe 15 minutes.
Well, you're lucky it wasn't this week because there's like snow, but there's ice under the snow.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're like one slip away from catastrophic disaster.
Wow, well, that would have been something to see.
Yeah, I book it back.
Might have made nine news, Dave.
My hands were freezing for grip. That's true. I could have got on it. My hands were freezing from gripping the box. Finally get back to school. It was just a disaster, you know? And you're right. The lesson here is always call and just spend the extra $10 on delivery.
Well, you remember not too long ago on the show, Katie sent me to the Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, you're always getting your order jacked up at the Chick-fil-A.
So of course I show up there and there's no water. I went to the wrong one.
Oh, yeah. You went to the wrong one,
I went,
too.
I went to the wrong one.
And
so.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Did you go to the wrong one, or was it sent to the wrong one? I feel like I went to the right Jimmy John's. I just sent it to the
Yeah, you clearly did.
One.
You sent it to the wrong one.
So it's a matter of semantics there of as far as which is right and what is wrong. But that was just, that was terrible. But that's what I've been, I was dealing with. So now we go.
I had no idea that you were going through that. You never said anything.
Well, I wanted to get your.
It's a dramatic story.
Yeah.
And the difference between your story and my story is I can blame it all on my wife.
I know. That's the problem. I'm the one who sent it to the wrong store. It's all 100% my fault. Laura, how has your week been?
Oh, it's been good. I have an ice story, though, because it's interesting. Andrew mentioned ice. So we never used to. When we first moved here, 2004, we never got ice. I don't ever remember getting ice for years and years and years.
Yeah, because it's always so dry here. You're right.
And now with climate change, now all of a sudden Colorado's getting ice. Mm-hmm. So
great movie, too. I love that movie, The Ice Storm. Kevin Kline. Is that Sigourney Weaver in that?
It's not Sigourney Weaver. I don't know.
Great movie.
Mm-hmm. Very good movie. This is not about that movie, though.
Okay.
So I had to pick Sylvie up from school. I pick her up all the time. Mm-hmm. But I picked her up on a Tuesday, and we had had an ice storm like that during the day, during the school day.
Yeah.
And the roads were fine, at least where we lived, but it was the sidewalks that were really bad. Do you remember
that's
that,
right.
Andrew?
I remember that.
So that day I came home from work.
Yes.
And Katie's like, be careful. So I was careful coming home from work, testing the roads.
Yeah, the roads weren't too bad.
No.
Back the car into the driveway.
Oh, no.
Go to get out of the car.
Yes. Yep.
And next thing I know, I'm on my ass.
Yeah.
My cell phone's in the air. My car keys are in the air. Yeah.
It's crazy. I felt too.
Yeah.
Oh, you felt too?
Yeah. It was just
a sheet of ice.
And
but you couldn't tell.
You couldn't see it. Usually you can see it. This was. I don't know. It was the weirdest ice
it
you
was.
Want
it was
to know.
It was very strange. So I'm sitting there in my parking spot. Mm-hmm,
as one does.
And I'm watching the kids pour out of the school.
Right.
And I see 3 to 5, conservatively, kids fall hard.
Right.
So multiple kids falling on a stair that comes out of a side door.
Oh, those are bad.
Going down hard. Yeah. Kids on a sidewalk that's around the parking lot.
Yeah.
Kids on the sidewalk that's next to my car. Mm. And I can tell, it's like a skating rink. So they're not just... So after they fall, they're also having trouble getting up, too.
Right.
One of those.
It's hard to get their footing.
You can't get your purchase.
Right.
So I'm looking at all this.
You got to do like that 3-point stance where you got two hands down on the ground.
Yeah, you do.
One foot.
The sprinter
and
stance.
And you got to spread the legs and slowly, kind of push yourself up. Yeah, it's tricky. It's very
That's
tricky.
True. Mm-hmm. So then I'm thinking, I hope my kid doesn't hurt herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking.
You just don't want her to embarrass herself, would be my thought.
Well, it was that and also hurt herself. Because, the kids are going down hard.
Yeah.
And so then the next thing I see is Sylvia sprinting, Andrew.
Oh, no.
Down from an icy, snow-packed hill.
What? Okay.
She always trots down this hill.
The hill.
And she starts coming down it, and then she loses her balance. The arms do the windmill.
Yeah.
But she catches herself because there's grass that still hasn't gotten any snow or ice on it. Mm-hmm. The very end, right before it hits the...
sidewalk.
Little retaining wall.
Oh, okay.
That's there.
Right.
So she catches herself. She does not fall. And she peers down into the car because she's about 3 foot higher than the car at this point.
Right.
She looks at me like, I've got this. You see that? I didn't fall.
See, I can run down a hill.
But at that moment, I wanted to yell at her and I couldn't get to her fast enough. I wanted to yell, the sidewalk is where you need to worry.
Right.
Watch the sidewalk. So she does what she always does, where she steps onto this concrete retaining wall that's about 3 feet above the sidewalk.
Oh, no.
And she usually does, she'll step on it and she'll jump down. So this time she steps on it and her feet go out from under her and she bounces like a rubber ball off the retaining wall and then down onto the sidewalk there.
Yeah.
And I'm like panicked. And then she tries to get up quickly because I think the ego has been bruised.
Of course. The ego and the back.
Amongst other things.
And, and then it was a mad scramble trying to get up and she kind of shuffled her way, like you said, Dave, like on the knees, hand outstretched towards the car.
Well, the thing is, it's like you're saying, your ego takes over because you're trying to look cool about it.
Well, you also want
to
get up quickly.
To do it. Yeah.
You want to get up quickly. You don't want to linger after that type of spill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just no way to do it.
No. So anyway, that was That was my Tuesday pickup.
Well, that's why you always need to bring a bicycle helmet when you go to pick up the kids.
There you go.
And you just chuck it up that hill.
Or ice skates. Yeah,
ice
sled.
Ice skates too, yep.
Yeah.
Andrew, sounds like we all fell.
Andrew, how have you been? I did not fall, for the record. Wow. Well,
mm-hmm. So, you know, it's been good. I took the weekend off, or not off, but I took like 24 hours off.
Oh.
Went up to the mountains, skied for half a day, you know, worked there, and then basically came home. But, you know, we're really getting some great snowstorm again today. Thursday, they're calling for more snow. You know, so we talked about, like, you know, how dry Colorado's been, mm-hmm. but we're certainly getting plenty of precipitation now. Right?
Well, yeah, but today's was also wet because I went for a run. I did 7 miles today, and the only way I was able to, thank you. See, I had to mention that.
Oh, no.
The only way I was able to do it was, and shout out, the product placement of the week goes to my Exo Spikes, which are, you strap them over your shoes, right over your tennis shoes, and they've got like, just like the little metal tips, like you would see maybe at like a golf shoe, but they're little metal and they dig right into the ice. Beautiful. I didn't have any problems
great.
At all.
Sylvia's trombone teacher keeps those in her purse in this kind of weather.
Yeah. You got to have them. Like, because it is everything. There's a layer of snow and right underneath it, every single side, everywhere I went today was just a layer of ice. Hmm. And those little spikes dig right into them and it was great.
So I've got three kids at home, two elementary school kids and, you know, middle schooler. And so they're all hoping that they get, you know, a half a day off of school, a couple hours off.
Yeah.
Now, the school district that we're in is got to be the stingiest school district.
No.
Well, and Denver too.
Denver also.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, well, these other school districts canceling school, et cetera. And it is slippery out there.
Yeah.
And yet, but the kids are just practically heartbroken.
I know.
Because they see this beautiful snow coming down as they're getting on the bus. And, you know, and they're getting on the bus.
Yeah. Well, and we literally got an email 2 days ago saying, Denver Public Schools are now implementing a late delay start. We have not done this in the past, but for in the future, on bad snow days, we will have. And then today, hello, the day it was snowing. On the drive up, this is the day. And no, all the teachers were mad. The kids were mad.
It was very strange.
Everybody was very upset.
Yeah, very, very strange.
And then it was snowing hard all day. Kids were like, do we get an early release? What's going on here, boss?
They don't ever hardly do an early release, do they?
No, they never do an early release.
It's hard for parents.
You know, they canceled after school activities.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
And the kids were coming up to me. They're like, well, my parents aren't picking me up till 8 because that's when I have rehearsal.
Oh,
and so what
no.
am I supposed to do? So, like, kids were like, they were carpooling. They were saying, this one girl was like, well, I've got 5 kids. They're going to come over to my house and we're going to hang out. And, you know. But yeah, that's what they did. They canceled the fun stuff. Keep school going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no stories really. Not this week. Next week I might have some updates for you.
All right. Sounds good. Well, we'll look forward to that. And we'll also look forward to a great conversation that Laura and I had with bestselling author Heather Gudenkauf. Her new book is The Overnight Guest. Now, this is a thriller that takes place, speaking of snowstorms, it actually takes place during a massive snowstorm, a blizzard in Iowa, where a true crime novelist is holed up in an old farmhouse writing about a horrific crime that occurred there 20 years before. Then the story jumps back 20 years to that time where we get to learn all about this tragedy. There's also a third timeline written from the point of view of a mysterious narrator describing their life, and we're kind of left to figure out how this all fits in. This is a very entertaining and engrossing read that will have you flipping the pages faster. You know, I love this book. I just flew right through it really quick. Very entertaining. This is a thriller that you won't want to put down. Love this one. And also enjoyed talking to Heather Gudenkauf. So here that conversation is for you right now. This is my soul. Test my life for my bread. Spend my time lost in space. Am I dead? Oh, let the river. Nice to meet you. I just loved your book. I just finished it, and so good. So good.
I could not put it down. It was so exciting.
Thank you so much. It's so good to hear.
Well, it's so good. called The Overnight Guest. It is a wild story about a writer trapped in a murder house in a blizzard. You know, I mean, who doesn't want that, really?
Sure, absolutely.
And then you find a child outside in the snow while this blizzard's going on. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, you know, lots of different things. I am a true crime addict. I love everything true crime, which sounds quite strange, but I listen to all the podcasts. I watch all the documentaries, the Datelines, so read the true crime books. And you know, I'm a fiction writer, so I don't write in necessarily in truths like true crime writers have to do. But I thought I can put one in one of my books. And I created the character of Wiley, who is a true crime writer. Another inspiration for the book was, you know, like writers often do, going in search of topics to write about. I was online and looking up, you know, they have those websites like 10 crazy facts about your state or 10 mysteries from your home state. I came across one. It was actually from Minnesota, but it was the story of a young woman who went out in a blizzard and crashed into a ditch. She got out of her car, you know, the blizzard is just raging around her, and she collapsed just a few hundred yards away from her friend's house, which was out in the country, and wasn't found until the next day. And she was, her eyes were frozen open, but she lived.
Wow. And
the story around it was that they took her, you know, the emergency personnel took her to the hospital. She was so frozen, they couldn't put an IV in her, but they were able to, so she had a complete recovery. And then that idea stuck well, and then the story just kind of took off from there.
Wow. You know, that now that you say the true crime, the story's told in, there's two storylines. There's, you know, one that goes 20 years earlier. And in that storyline, you know, a crime happens. And the way that you detailed it was so satisfying to me of like, here's when the cops arrive and this is what they do. And it was this whole thing that I don't know why, but it was like reading, I guess you're right, a true crime story. And it was so satisfying with all the different like steps of what led up. Really, really good.
Thank you. I really wanted to try and do that. And like you said, put a true crime book within a fiction.
Yes.
Story, and it was really hard. I've grabbed for true crime writers, and you know, now the procedural parts, and also including, you know, the victims and their families, and you know, including that aspect of it as well. But it was really, you know, a fun book to write as well, being able to take those different avenues to tell the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as a true crime aficionado and a big fan like you are, and as a writer of thrillers, is there like a reason why you haven't tried writing a true crime, or is it just, it's just not as fun? It's probably just too brutal. Like I could never imagine trying to write or do a true crime podcast because it would just seem too real. Is that why you would never do that? Or
yeah, I think, you know, when, you know, we consume a lot of true crime almost as entertainment, and sometimes we forget that real people are behind the story. Yeah. And I not that I wouldn't ever do it, but I you know, I deal in fiction, and it, for me, you know, it's when I tell a story, I want to embellish, I want it to, you know, let the characters take me where they go. You know, keeping to just the facts, ma'am, kind of thing would be tough for me.
No,
get it right. You have to really get it right if you're working where you should get it right with true crime.
Yeah. And there's an obligation to the families, like you said, too.
Right.
And then I thought it was interesting that the present day storyline, you know, had a blizzard and it was so cold. And then the 20 years earlier was a tremendous heat wave. I mean, characters had sweat just like dripping off their faces. They're like, is the heat on in here? You know, just crazy. It was incredibly hot. Did you always have the two storylines this way? Because it was a great device for me to like, okay, I'm back. Even though you told me, but I don't always pay attention to the headlines.
Yeah. I did do that purposefully. And I live in Iowa, and like any Midwest state and other places as well, we have extreme seasons. It feels like, you know, really hot August summers and, you know, cold winters, snowy winters. But I did want to make sure there was a, you know, a line drawn so the readers could go on the journey with me, and trying not to take them out of the story.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out where they're at and what year they're in and what season they're in. I tried to make that more clear, but I also think it just the, I needed it that way for the logistics of the story, and it worked perfectly, you know. You know, how else are you going to get, you know, somebody isolated even in rural Iowa with no cell phone and no electricity?
That's a really good point.
Bring in the natural disaster. But I like reading books about where the weather is a big factor and I can't control that. And just kind of lends itself to the story.
Yeah. It just made it so atmospheric, and it adds to the, the overall feeling of the book. But speaking of the Midwest, now you tell me, maybe it's just me putting my own thoughts into this, but I was getting, and you mentioned true crime, you mentioned the Midwest, a family slaughtered. Mm-hmm. I couldn't help but thinking, and then you got a family named Cutter, and I kept having true in cold blood, you know, the Clutter family flashbacks. Mm-hmm. Was that intentional, or is that just me reading into it?
No, I mean, that's one of, you know, the ultimate, I guess, true crime books, you know, of all time, and definitely has influenced my writing. And I'm trying to think if I don't think the Cutter name was an actual nod to it.
Clutter is the family from In Cold Blood, you know, and Cutter.
Yeah,
is the book.
I know exactly what you're saying there, and maybe on the subconscious level, I did do that. Definitely, you know, the atmosphere that Truman Capote, you know, presented to us, and the, you know, it's reads like fiction, but it's got this, you know, this truth to it as well. And so definitely there are shades of In Cold Blood in the book.
Is that your favorite? You have a favorite, like, true crime book?
Yeah, that's definitely at the top, if not at the top. I also really fell in love with the writing of Michelle McNamara, who wrote I'll Be Gone in the Dark, which is about the search for the Golden State Killer. And I don't scare easily in reading books, but that book, along with In Cold Blood, just gave me chills. And it was just perfect.
Yeah. Your book too, with the blizzard scenes in particular, just because it's a woman alone, you know, and just reading that and thinking, what on earth would I have done? Probably wouldn't have done some of the things she did, but I mean, she was hardcore, you know? Yeah. Like, really strong female character. Did you write this? I'm assuming you wrote it during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I was kind of curious, was it wintertime when you wrote this? Was it summertime? What were the writing conditions like for you?
Yeah. So when I started writing it, I knew I wanted to have the two seasons very clearly outlined there. So I started writing the summer seasons in the summer.
That's awesome.
As far as I could. And, you know, I went on my long walks with my dog and, you know, tried to really experience, you know, the heat of summer and hopefully translate that into my writing. And then when the weather changed, I stopped where I was at, and I went into the winter scenes. And thankfully, I guess, we had a really snowy winter, the winter. And it was pretty brutal. It was cold and snowy and blowing. And I would go out there, bundle up, get the right gear, and go out and walk in that, and just try to imagine what that was like for Wiley. when she did venture out into the storm, and the other characters in the book. And it was really fun. It was really fun to do that. And then, you know, as then I went back and, you know, continued to work on both aspects of the story as I moved on through the
when
year.
When you do that, so they're cut. Is that fun for you to go back and then merge the two stories together? Because it seems like that would be really satisfying.
It really is. And I don't really approach them separately, like on the page. Mm-hmm. I go back and forth a lot, or I'll, you know, put page breaks in, planning ahead. I don't plan out my novels, have outlines, but as I write, I add those pieces in, those breaks in. And it's fun to see how they come together and where I can connect the two, and going back in the revision process, how to make sure that they tie together and that the stories match in the way they need to and hopefully flow nicely.
Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned your dog that you went on walks with, because I noticed the dogs in this book. I love that, you know, Taz, you got the comfort dog, and then you have search and rescue dogs. Mm-hmm. Looks like Laura has gone to take care of our dogs, perhaps. I don't know, because they always bark a lot. What kind of dog do you have?
So I have a German short hair pointer. Named Lolo, and she is my absolute sidekick. She's right here. Oh no, she's not.
Lolo.
but she's being, you know, 99% of the time hanging out while I'm writing or when we go on walks. And I love dogs and I love animals. And to date, there's a dog in every single one of my books in some shape or form.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And do you talk to Lolo and you're like, I'm writing about you right now.
Yeah. Her characteristics absolutely show up in the books.
That bloodhound was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never seen one of those in action. Have you ever done any police type of, I know writers consult with police every once in a while. Have you ever seen that in action?
No, I have not seen, you know, the working dogs in action at all, though I've included police dogs in other books that I've written. So I've done the research and you know, talked to people. And but I do, you know, I do have a former police chief on speed dial for my book. So, when, you know, if I have some police procedural questions, I can always email or call him. And he is more than happy to try and get me on the straight and narrow of what's realistic and makes sense for the story.
That's awesome.
I mean, you got to have that. It's got to come, especially in a book like this, where the terror is so real and ever present and you've got the cops there. I would think it's important to have somebody like that around. That's great that you do. Hopefully. And it sounds like he's happy to help out. So I guess that's it's good to, you got to really nurture those relationships. Am I right? When you find someone good like that.
Yeah. So he's great. His kids and my kids, our kids went to school together. So he's kind enough to let me bend his ear often.
That's great. Now, I did mark down this quote that you had in the book that I thought was really appropriate and struck me. Just kind of, and this was a quote from the point of view of a little girl, and she says, "It isn't the dark that you should be afraid of; it's the monsters who step out into the light that you need to fear." And that was just something that really resonated with me. And as far as this book goes, kind of stuck with me. You remember writing that and thinking about that?
Yeah, you know, this child is put in this very, you know, heartbreaking, scary situation. And she finds comfort actually in the shadows and in the dark, because that's when she's safe. It's when this presence makes itself known that she knows things are going to go south, things are going to go badly. And she finds comfort being that she doesn't fear the dark. It's a safe her.
Yeah, I liked how you just kind of took that old trope, that horror trope of be scared of the shadows, and you know, kind of put it on put it on its head, and we could see why she would take comfort in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for sure.
That's also a true crime thing. When you start reading true crime, you realize, oh, we're the ones. It's not made up stuff from our minds. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And then I was kind of curious too, because on your website, it mentions that you grew up with just a profound mm-hmm. hearing loss. And I found that interesting in that you're probably a writer today because of that, I would imagine. And I was curious how important reading was and all of that good stuff for you.
It really was. I do have a profound hearing loss. I can't hear at all on my left side. I can hear on my right side, but with my kind of hearing loss, crowded rooms are really challenging. Having conversations, any background noise is tough. And that really made itself known in school before they discovered my hearing loss. So school was really hard for me, really hard. And I got pretty far behind and struggled to learn how to read and had some speech things. But they figured it out. I was fitted for hearing aids, and it was like the sun came out and things started making sense. And I started catching up and really discovered reading to be just my favorite thing to do. And, you know, I tell this story a lot, but, you know, also with this kind of hearing loss, whether you have hearing aids or not, it's a lot of work to try and understand and follow along what's going on with everybody at school. So I came home from school really tired, and I'd come home to my wonderful family. I have five older brothers and sisters, a mom and dad, couple of pets, but I was tired and I just wanted to have some quiet and be alone. So I would go to our toy box, and I'd pull out all the toys, climb inside with a book, flashlight, and just say, leave me alone. And where my reading love, you know, was developed.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Oh, that's really cool.
My parents gave it to me as a wedding gift. Filled it with like towels and linens and things, but now it's in my office and I fill it with notebooks and all kinds of writing stuff.
That's awesome.
You know, I'd be tempted to crawl back in there. You don't try to get back.
I wouldn't. I might get in, but I'd have a hard time getting out.
That's really funny. What kind of books were your favorites when you were younger?
I loved Laura Ingalls Wilder. I loved Judy Blume and Lois Lowry. Yeah. I loved all those books. Beverly Cleary.
Yeah.
You know, read all those in the toy box. And then as I got a little bit older, I'm drawn to mysteries and thrillers, and that's something I love that I share with my dad. My dad is a big mystery thriller reader, and so as I got older, we'd start sharing books, or I'd pull Stephen King books off the shelf that I probably shouldn't have been reading at that age, the age I was, but really was drawn to the mystery and kind of the dark side of human nature in that sense, fictionally. And I have a really wide array of reading interests. I'll read just about anything.
Yeah, me too. Now,
your character in the book, Wiley, so she's this writer, and you have a scene where she's doing a reading, and you know, she's reading from this heartfelt manuscript that she wrote, and she's kind of tearing up. But it just, I just got me curious. Do you have any like stories from when you were allowed? I don't know if you're allowed to do any book readings or go out in public right now. But when you were, do you have any like interesting things that have happened to you during a reading? Any embarrassing moments? Enjoy doing that.
Yeah, I love getting out. I haven't gotten out. Like you said, it's been a couple years really since we've been able to get out, but I'm hopefully, fingers crossed, to be able to go to a few in-person events safely this round. We'll see how things go. But I'm trying to think, I've been pretty lucky with my events. Nothing too crazy has happened. I have those events where no one shows up, or, lot of people show up. And so that's always kind of awkward when you're sitting there with the lovely booksellers. And it's just you, and they're just lovely and wonderful.
But yeah.
But that's happened. And I was trying to think, some of the hardest question somebody had ever asked me was what my favorite sentence that I'd ever written was. And I was stumped. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I mean, I've written a lot of sentences.
That's a weird one.
Yeah, I couldn't pin that down.
You can just give them the one that I gave you a little while ago. That's a good one.
I'm putting that in my pocket if I'm ever
asked. You're welcome. And you can reference that one just in case anyone ever, of course, you'll never get that question again. And why would you? That's a terrible question in my mind.
Are you doing any book readings in person nowadays or book signings?
The hope is I have a few set up. I'm from Iowa. And so we have some local Iowa bookstores that, you know, in the past I would go to with every new book. So we're going to try that. I have a few events coming up, masked and, you know, safely, hopefully. Yeah. But we're taking it day by day because we want to make sure making good decisions and everybody's comfortable.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm looking forward to getting out there. But this has been, you know, being able to connect so much more with folks online has been just fabulous too. Really been neat.
That's good.
It kind of does open things up a little bit. And I think that can be used.
Yes.
Do you have, so when you write, do you have any interesting like quirks or superstitions that you do that have to be in place? You got to have your dog at your feet, I'm sure. Lolo's down there.
Yes. Lolo's got to be nearby. You know, I tend to have music playing when I'm writing.
Interesting.
I don't particularly like the complete silence. Not a fan of that. I always have my notebooks nearby.
What kind of music are you going with? Were we talking Metallica, AC/DC?
Yeah. Well, it depends on the book and the character I'm writing. So This Is How I Lie. There's a character, Nola, who I envisioned really liking some heavy metal. And so I play that while I wrote her scene. Awesome. Yeah. When I need to just really focus, I do tend to put some classical music on just so that with no lyrics or anything, just so I can stay focused and in the zone. But if I, you know, there's a character I'm writing right now who I envision her listening to country music. And so I'll put on some country music while I'm writing that character. Those are kind of my little quirks.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've never heard anyone mention that, but that makes perfect sense. You want to get into the mind of the character. Let's listen to the music. In fact, you should go even further and, you know, make yourself a meal with the kind of meals that the character, you get that far into it. That's probably too much. That's silly. Why would I even mention that?
No, that's something to think about. But I have about the kinds of things they might eat. I have. I mean, that definitely, I keep notebooks on the characters as I write. I write down everything, you know, if they're vegetarian or vegan or whatever. And sometimes it makes it into the book. Sometimes it doesn't.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Huh. I didn't know. Because if you know the character so well, so then you know how they're going to behave in a certain situation. Yeah.
Hope so.
You could be a method actor then.
All right, Heather, it's time now for our segment we call Quick Six, six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Okay, Dexter New Blood.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the final, I guess maybe the final season. They just came out with it this last, you know, fall, winter. Really good, I thought.
What fictional world or place would you like to visit? And if it's dangerous, we will let you back in.
Okay. You know, the one right to mind, are you familiar with the Louise Penny Inspector Gamache?
Yeah.
Okay. So they have Town of Three Pines, and when I read the first book, Still Life, I thought, oh, this is pretty neat. This is, you know, I like this story. This looks like a neat, cool little town. By the second book, I wanted to go visit. Yeah. By the third book, I was ready to move there. By the fourth book, I wanted to open up my own shop on the main street with everybody else. And so, yeah, definitely that would be a place I would love to visit or live.
What kind of shop would you open there? Bookshop?
I can't do a bookstore because they already have one there, and that wouldn't be nice. But I didn't think of it that
way. See, you got to think about it. If you're going to open up, a small business is a very tricky investment. So, you know, we need to think about these things.
A stationery store, because I love notebooks and pens and paper.
You write longhand for your books? Or maybe
longhand. I start not for very long because that is not efficient at all. Yeah. But I wrote a lot of my first novel in longhand, and I start each of my books that way, but very quickly transfer it over because it's not efficient. But whenever I get stuck, I go back to my journals and notebooks. I just find something about like moving away from the computer and putting hand to paper kind of jogs things for me, loosens things up, and I'm able to kind of work out some tougher spots that I'm in with my writing.
I can see that, definitely.
Yeah. Well, something about just the manual use of the pencil.
Yeah.
Understand it. All right, Heather, next question. What is a top five favorite movie of yours?
Oh, goodness. Top five favorite movie. Okay, I'm saying this because I just watched it recently. Hoosier.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, in the Midwest, of course, that's Indiana. But yeah, I was close enough. Of course, that's a great one.
And when it came out, you know, I played high school basketball and, you know, was all about that. And I saw it the other day, actually. And it was like, oh, yeah, this holds up. This is a good show. Yeah, holds up pretty well. Yeah,
it does. That's a great movie. I love that movie.
Yeah. I try to watch that one at least once a year, right around March Madness when the NCAA tournament gets going. That's a good time to watch that one. And Dennis Hopper, you know, you always forget that Dennis Hopper's in that one. And he's so good in it. But
he is excellent. I think he was nominated for an Oscar for that one.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. How about this? How about a top five favorite book?
Okay. My number one favorite book of all time, I say this fast, it's My Antonia by Willa Cather, but a goodie. But I read that when I was 18, I think, and absolutely fell in love with the way that she described the setting of, it was Nebraska that story set in, becomes a character in the book. And I just love the way she wrote and all her books. But that one, I really come back to. I try to reread parts of it or all of it every year. My favorite.
Nice. How about that? How about this one? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
No.
Oh, you don't get up there?
Sing. I would never get up in public and sing. That is not my talent. But kind of funny. I was eating dinner with my husband and one of my kids last night, and they were like dousing it. I hope this reference makes sense to you. Dousing it with like soy sauce or something. I said, "Do you remember that song from when we were kids? Saturday morning cartoons. They always had those public service announcements. Don't drown your food." It was this whole little thing. And I sang it, and they're like, "Who are you?"
I would watch Saturday morning cartoons every Saturday. I don't really, I remember Conjunction Junction, What's Your Function?
It was one of those.
Wow.
Look it up. It's hilarious.
I got to look that up. As soon as we get off this call, I'm looking that up.
For my family, I would never do karaoke. Okay.
Oh, that's really funny. Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
I am reading, this is funny because I always have a couple going on at a time. I'm reading John Grisham's The Judge's List.
Oh, yeah.
The new one.
Cool.
Very good.
Cool.
Very good. Well, Heather, we loved your book, The Overnight Guest. And such a thrill ride. Really, really couldn't put it down.
Thank you
all right,
so
Heather,
much.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate the time.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
Nice to meet you. Have a
good rest of your day. You as well.
Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. The Inside Flap. All right, there you go. Shout out to Heather Gudenkauf.
So, you know, one of the coldest winters I've ever spent in my life was in Des Moines, Iowa.
There you go. Well, that's right where this book takes place.
And I went to I went to college there. And
yes.
You get this biting wind right from the north.
Yes. It's like damp a little bit, right? Yeah.
And it is just bitter cold to the point where like you need like every surface just covered.
Wow.
You know, your eyeglasses hurt. Your metal frames, your eyeglasses hurt.
Wow.
You know, just because it's so bitter cold. But
you know I've always heard that. Heard that.
The Midwest. Mm-hmm. The Midwest has those. Yeah.
But this book just brings it all back.
I've never really, I don't think I've ever experienced that cold, that Midwest
closest
cold,
we've ever come is Milwaukee in like February. That was miserable.
That was not good.
Miserable. Not
good. Colorado,
and
not,
we had come from Florida. So it felt...
Even today, on a day that snowed all day,
scary.
Right at the end of the day, the sun came out and I saw
a blue
sky. And that's always the way it works. You always get some blue sky in there.
The older I get, though, the more I want warmth in the winter.
I know. The longer it takes for my hands to warm up.
Might be one of those snowbirds.
All right, well, let's open it up, shall we?
The library is officially open.
Time for some... What do we got?
Book reviews.
Oh, here we go. We got some book reviews. And let's start with...
Laura Medicus.
All right, Laura, what do you have for us this week?
I have a book called These Silent Woods by Kimmy, K-I-M-I, Cunningham Grant.
Okay.
And this is such a good book. Beautiful cover, too. Mm. So this is a father-daughter.
Let me guess. Mm-hmm. Are there woods on the cover?
Yes. Beautiful forest.
Yes. Nailed it.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of fog. A little mist there. Mm-hmm.
Andrew was going to say there was a lake on the cover.
Or desert. So this is a father-daughter story. It's set deep in the Appalachian woods. And let me tell you, this author writes about nature in a way that made me want to pack up and move to a place that's off the grid in the mountains somewhere.
Well, yeah, I thought you wanted to go to Florida.
Well, that too.
Okay.
So I don't usually want to pack up. There's a lot of things I want to do with my life, Dave. There's a lot of things. I'm still young enough. I have dreams and plans and hopes for my future retirement. Yeah. So it did make me want to do that.
We could podcast from anywhere.
Sort of. Well, so this father-daughter pair... they have been living in a very remote area with no electricity. So for about 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah, really remote.
Whoa.
Uh-huh. And the daughter, her name is Finch. She's 8 years old. And she's lived there her whole life as far as she knows. So their nearest neighbor is an eccentric mountain man who goes by Scotland. He's a really funny character. Liked him a lot. He has some humor that he brings to the story. And he has a crow as a pet. So, I mean, you know, right there.
Sure.
Favorite.
Yeah.
So we don't know exactly why this father-daughter pair are living so remotely. But it's obvious that the father is in hiding for some reason and is also hiding his daughter, but we're not sure why.
All right.
It's almost winter, right? And they, rely on a friend to bring them supplies once a year at a certain date. So this is a guy that every, let's say, you know, November 30th brings them a huge thing, like Costco run, basically.
Right. Okay. A massive
and it's once
Costco
a year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he knows...
so there's no supply chain issues.
That's true. Well, the dad knows if this guy doesn't show up, we're in trouble. So this year, what do you know? The friend doesn't show up. And he knew his friend was sick and his friend had told him that if something happens to me and I don't ever show up on a date, something has happened to me.
Because they don't have any phone. They don't have any way to contact
the outside world.
Okay.
No, there's no way. Okay. They do have a car though. So the dad decides that he needs to...
It's just my phone falling into my...
you got lucky there.
Werner's ginger soda.
So the dad knows that he needs to go down and make a Walmart run, basically, into town, which is a couple hours away. and he's nervous about it. He knows it's not a good idea, but he's worried they might not survive the winter.
We still don't know at this point why he's nervous about going into town.
No, okay. There's things that have been alluded to it,
right?
But we're still not really sure.
Okay.
So this just sets a whole story in motion of why he's in hiding, what he's got to lose, what his neighbor, this guy Scotland, knows, what his daughter doesn't know about any of this, or in what she doesn't know about the world. She's never gone to school. This is very, very good. So this is a thriller, but it reads like kind of outdoor fiction, and it really reminded me of a Peter Heller story.
Oh, yeah, as recommended by me last week. No, I'm sorry. I read The River.
Oh, you did?
That you had recommended
River,
earlier.
The River's so good. Mm.
But
so,
I did recommend The Guide.
This book is riveting. I really enjoyed the survival aspect to it. There's a lot in here about how do you live with no electricity for years and years on your own? What do you do about doctors and things like that? What does your day look like? Just your day-to-day stuff. How do you keep warm? How do you prepare for winter? How do you do? It's awesome. I love that, like, Swiss Family Robinson kind of stuff.
Cool.
Really enjoyable. And then there's just heartache and parental worry in here that from the dad's point of view. And it's just very identifiable. Even though I would not have done what this guy did. And I had some thoughts about it, so I'd be curious to talk with somebody else who's read it. So this is an excellent book. When I finished it,
Laura Medicus. Yeah. Hit her up on Twitter.
I don't ever check Twitter. Oh, Instagram.
Hit her up on the gram.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be better.
Okay.
So when I finished this book, I tried to read a couple other books and I couldn't because the echo or the resonance of this book was so strong and stayed with me, of this father daughter out in the woods together, just surviving for years
really
and years.
This one. I got to read this one.
I loved it. This is a very good book. It's new this year or last year too.
Okay.
So how do you think Dave and Sylvia would have handled this situation?
You know, up until she would probably be 8, I don't know, she might have driven him nuts. The thing is, if you have an extroverted child, I think you'd have more difficulty.
Yeah.
With this.
Well, you need attention. I need attention as well.
Oh, Dave does need attention.
What's it called?
It's called These Woods? Silent Woods.
These Silent Woods. Mm-hmm. Also, no Jimmy John's out there. So, you know, there's that.
True. And no NBA on TV, Dave.
Oh, my goodness. How am I going to live
no
without
TV.
My Nuggets?
The cabin, though, incidentally, is filled with books. So that's how she's kind of gotten her education.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then they get a cat at one point, and the daughter names him Walt Whitman. And that's really cute. So just this feeling this book gave me, just so enjoyable. I just wanted to hold on to it.
Looks great. Yeah.
So Dave, are you ready to move to the mountains?
Let's go. Let's cut this podcast short. Andrew.
And then Florida.
You're going to have to take over for the rest of the show. All right. Mountains. Wait, we're in the mountains. Appalachian Mountains?
No. Just anywhere, you know, out.
Okay.
In the wilderness.
Gotcha.
Remote.
Wilderness.
Yeah.
Well, I know of a good cabin in Granby that we can take over.
A little too close to others.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, that book is recommended by who?
Me.
I'll tell you who. Well, my button's not working.
That's okay.
All right.
I'm not going to sing
better.
It.
That book is recommended by
Laura Medicus.
Laura Medicus. My book this week.
Dave Medicus.
Also resonated with me. Talk about books that really resonate. This is one that did it for me as well. Notes on an Execution is the name of it. This is written by Danya Kukovka. And if you have ever wondered, Andrew, you ever wonder what it was like to be on death row, specifically what it would be like on your last day on death row and the hours leading up to your execution?
Oddly, no.
I have wondered that a little bit. I have thought about it.
Then this book is...
I think because of that Sean Penn movie.
Dead Man Walking.
Yeah, a long time ago.
But even if you, listen, even Andrew, you've never wanted it, this book is still for you. Why? Because it's an absolutely brilliant book that is beautifully written and told the story not only of this man, a murderer, living out his last hours on death row, but also, and what this book really is, this is the story of all the people in his life whose lives he has affected by his murders. Because as the author explains in a note at the beginning of the book, she is tired of seeing Ted Bundy's face.
Oh.
This is the book that really gives voice and allows us to see the havoc that is wrecked and the horror and tragedy that befall the families of those people that are affected by these serial killers, by these murderers. You know, let's glorify Charles Manson and what. No, let's talk about the people who have been affected by them. Now, the man in this case, the murderer on death row, his name is Ansel Parker. He is convicted of having killed four women. And as the book opens, we are inside his head, hearing his thoughts as his last day on earth arrives. Well, then we flash back to his childhood. We meet his mother. She was 17 years old when he was born. Now, she has a really interesting backstory as we get into really his childhood. We also meet a woman named Safi. This is the detective who's been after him for years and who also has a connection to him that goes back years. And we hear from Hazel, who is the twin sister of the woman this man Ansel married. This is an unforgettable book, one that hopefully will make you think twice before purchasing that mug with the serial killer face on him. This book is tragic, heartbreaking, suspenseful. It really just makes you think, and it makes you, more importantly, feel. This is a book with characters that are fully drawn. And again, like I said, it resonates with you long after it's gone. I'm still thinking about this book. It's haunting. It's evocative. It's just a lyrical tribute to the lost lives that are left behind, even as, you know, more lives are lost. So, so good. Can't recommend this one highly enough. Yes, Andrew.
So he's on death row, but is there any question as to whether he was guilty or not?
No, there's no question at all.
Even he admits, I did these things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I've seen it described as a thriller. I wouldn't call it a thriller. I would call this, this is a literary fiction that just happens to have murder as a subject, you know. Mm-hmm. This is really, really good.
Interesting.
Notes on an Execution, recommended by
Dave Medicus.
Andrew Dowd.
So this book really resonated with me. This
oh, look at that. We have three
gotta stick with the theme.
Resonating sure. books.
And this is...
And I haven't even gotten to the audiobook, so we'll see. Man.
And this is considered a science fiction thriller. It's right in the title. The book is called Unidentified by Douglas E. Richards. He is the New York Times best-selling author of Wired and other books.
Okay.
Now, Dave and Laura.
Yes.
I mean,
we're here.
Do you think about
whatever you're going to ask me? I'm not going to know.
Do you think about UFOs? I mean, do you think they might be real? I mean, have you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about them. I'd like to think that yes, they are real. And I'd like to think that I don't know enough, mm-hmm. so I can't rule them out.
I spend no time thinking about them. I'm sure, yes, I think they're real, but I don't think we'll ever encounter them.
I don't
them.
Think it's as big of a conspiracy as people think, though.
Yeah. If it hasn't happened in the thousand, million, how many years have humans been around?
Maybe it has. We just don't know.
Oh, we would have heard.
Why do they reject us, though? That's what I don't understand. Military pilots say they see stuff all the time they can't explain. Right, Andrew? All the time.
They're on drugs.
And this story gets into that, but over the last several years.
Marv will tell you that.
The military has actually released.
Yeah, a lot of documents, right?
Evidence, videos. Because
I read about that.
Audio tapes.
Yeah.
Which is really irrefutable evidence that they've experienced something that...
They don't know what it is.
Strange phenomena.
We can't explain
sure.
it.
Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But they like touch down, take a look, and then they're like, yeah, no thanks.
Yeah. So recently, you know, the military and the governments are starting to come clean.
Mm-hmm.
That there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, and that's not science fiction. I mean, that's fact. Mm-hmm. We can't explain it.
Yeah.
But there's something there.
Unexplainable phenomena.
And so Doug Richards basically starts this book out.
Is this nonfiction?
Well, it starts out as nonfiction.
Okay.
So the way this starts out.
This sounds good.
Yeah.
It is about an author. His name is Jason Ramsey.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason Ramsey writes science fiction. And he considers that he got lucky. And he's a very popular novelist. But his books are well researched. They're very factual. I mean, these are real hard sci-fi books that he's writing. So he has had, you know, decades of success, and he basically is getting ready to go on this talk show.
All right.
Right.
Now you say this. I'm sorry to stop you, but you say the book starts out as nonfiction. So is this a real guy?
Well, no. Jason Ramsey isn't a real guy, but you know, Jason Ramsey could be Douglas E. Richards. Right, the author. I mean, so it starts out, you know, that it could be any sci-fi novelist, right? That writes hard sci-fi, well-researched.
Okay, gotcha. Right? So
very plausible.
Okay.
Now, he's getting ready to go on the talk show to talk about, you know, revealing some secrets about UFOs. So he's kind of set the stage, and he's going on this podcast where there are tens of millions of listeners around the world.
I know of a podcast that could use tens of... Tell a friend.
Hey, so it's just like The Inside Flap. Friend. Yeah, just like our podcast. Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, now, in this, in the, you know, in the book, Douglas E. Richard writes about, you know, real events.
Sorry.
Right, as the character of Jason Ramsey.
Yeah.
So I
see.
And he talks about, you know, these things have happened recently. Mm-hmm. Irrefutable evidence that there's something going on. And then in this book, he also links to two actual patents. And I sent Dave here the links.
Yes, you did.
And so, Dave, you want to...
Couldn't make heads or tails out of them.
And so, these patents...
One for an electromagnetic field generator.
A probe? What?
And another one for an unconventional spacecraft propulsion system.
Now, these patents are real patents referenced in the book. And these patents were backed by the U.S. Navy that basically said,
right,
these things exist and are real. Hmm. Right? And so, you know, this, it's just really interesting with the premise, the way this hooks you in. It's reality, it's reality, it's reality.
Do you, how often do you think about UFOs? You think about them a lot, don't you?
I wouldn't say a lot.
No.
But I know that there's something there that we can't explain, right? I've talked to firsthand witnesses who have seen things they can't explain. Military pilots.
It's always the military. They're in the middle of nowhere, over the ocean.
Well, and
they're overworked.
Strange.
They're underpaid.
Well, that might be
not
true.
Not according to a certain General Accounting Office study from about, you know, 30 years ago. When you actually consider all the benefits the military gets, they're paid pretty well. They get to retire after 20 years. So not exactly underpaid, Dave. I have to disagree with you there. But anyways.
Yeah, Andrew has a brother who's in the Coast Guard.
That is true.
No, retired.
Retired.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, he's my age.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And
he's retired.
He's retired. Hmm. So, in any case, so when he goes on this talk show, and he basically lays out, and he lays lots of stuff out, and it's really a great, and he's got the listeners hooked. Everybody's waiting for him to spill the beans. And he stops just short of that, and he says, I hate to do this to you, but basically, I've been given an opportunity, and I have to go investigate this, but I'll be back in 2 weeks to tell you guys the rest of the story.
Not like Paul Harvey.
Yeah. And now you know the rest of the story. So, you know, and so they're not happy with it, but he's got them hooked. And, you know, and this is his audience, right? And so what's going to happen? So this is when the book really turns to science fiction, right? Up to this point, it's all fact-based. It's all plausible.
Right.
And so what happens is Jason Ramsey has decided, like, because he said this, that I know about the UFOs. I'm gonna reveal all. And so he has set this big trap. And so what he's done is he set this trap. Literally, he has set a trap because he doesn't really know the truth. And so... Maybe he knows some things, right? And so he has set this trap. And everything that happens, like the moment he sets this trap, is really where the science fiction takes
off. When you say trap, set a trap, is it like...
he said it a lot. So
how to catch an alien? Is that what you mean? Like how to marry a millionaire?
So the trap is he's basically set up this warehouse, and he has hired like these paramilitary groups to provide security, and... you know, that something is going to go down here, right?
Okay.
And so, of course, something does go down there. And so what ends up happening is this trap ends up being a trap within a trap within a trap within a trap. I mean, it is just like, as far as everything that happens here and this conspiracy that's been going on for maybe hundreds, if not thousands of years, basically starts to reveal itself. And it's just like, you know, he springs this trap... and just what happens, and then where this goes. So it's very fast-paced. It's based in, you know, it starts out as very extremely plausible. And then when this trap sets is really where the science fiction takes over. Or is it? but, you know, it's just a very fascinating premise. I could definitely see this getting made into a film.
I like the title. Unidentified. Yeah. It's good.
And so, But the book is, yeah, Unidentified by Douglas E. Richard. Hmm. It's titled a science fiction thriller, and it is. It's extremely fast-paced. There are many twists. There are plots within plots within plots. You know, and you keep reading trying to figure out, well, what's the real story?
Right.
What's the real story? Because what you think is real isn't real.
Interesting.
And you just, this book just keeps chasing till the end of the book, you know, what is the reality?
All right. Well, that sounds really good.
Sounds great.
Check that one out. And that is recommended by
Andrew Dowd.
Which brings us to the
audiobook of the week.
And I have a sci-fi thriller for your audiobook of the week. Yes, I do. I absolutely do. It is called The Unfamiliar Garden by Benjamin Percy. And this is narrated by Mila Lee and Will Collier. So, and this is the second book in the series, but you can listen to this as a standalone. I didn't read the first one, and I enjoyed this one immensely. So this is an unsettling, creepy, yes, Andrew.
What has a garden got to do with science fiction? Come on.
Well.
Is it Eden?
When the garden grows at a rapid rate, and there's spores involved and strange mushrooms and fungi involved.
Reminds me of our dinner conversation about how to pronounce nihilism.
Nihilism.
No.
Now, this is unsettling. This is much, not unlike our conversation. This is unsettling. It's creepy. It is a weird apocalyptic thriller that is part science fiction and part horror.
I read a book called, well, it's a trilogy called The Southern Trilogy by Jeff Vandermeer.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of that with spores, and it was sci-fi, and it was post-apocalyptic kind of.
Okay, yeah. Well, what happens in this book is, like, 5 years before this one, there was a meteor shower, and it kind of did some damage, and it changed.
Was there something in the meteor that grew?
Well, this is set in the Puget Sound, and what happened, it changed the climate there from, you know, this lush tropical area to a drought area.
Huh.
And it seems that now it's 5 years later, but now the rains have come back, but there's stuff growing that has been dormant for these five years all of a sudden. Yeah.
Good premise.
It's really cool. There's a couple at the heart of it, Jack and Nora. Now they are recently divorced because one of the reasons why they got divorced is because their young daughter, who was out in the woods by herself, mysteriously disappeared.
Ugh.
Yeah, so Nora is a homicide detective, and Jack is a scientist/professor, and the book focuses mainly on their two storylines. So what Jack is up to, he is investigating these strange growths that have been happening. And Nora is investigating some strange murders that are going on. Really, I don't want to say, a lot of the fun of this book is discovering the twists and the kind of strange things that happen in it. So I don't want to give
away really good, Dave.
Too much, but it is delightful. I just had a great time listening to this. It's unique. It's different. It's just strange. Sometimes you just want to read about stuff that's just strange happenings and occurrences. And this book has it in spades. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is The Unfamiliar Garden by Benjamin Percy.
Jack was known as the fun dad. His wife said it like an accusation. He never dealt with the discipline or the tears. He never remembered that screen time had to be earned with chores or that baths were limited by a half-hour timer. Maybe Nora had a point when she said he only trafficked in laughs and cuddles. But maybe, he argued, that's what made them a good team. They each brought a different skill set to the parenting game. She was the organizer, he was the improviser. His wife supervised hair and teeth brushing, while he told elaborate bedtime stories and checked under the box spring for monsters before kissing Mia on the forehead and saying goodnight. His wife made the grocery lists and cooked precisely from recipes, and he cleaned up the mess in the kitchen while blasting music and teaching their daughter about 1980s hair metal bands. "What's extra annoying," Nora once said, "is that you like to point out your successes. When you make her put the graham crackers back in the cupboard or change out the toilet paper roll, you proudly mention it to me. Like you deserve some kind of trophy."
All right, there you go. That is your
audiobook of the week.
Audiobook of the week. Check it out, The Unfamiliar Garden. All right, that'll do it for us this week. Thanks so much to Heather Gudenkauf for joining us. Check out our new book, The Overnight Guest. My name is Dave Medicus. We'll see you next time.
Adios.
UFOs, the reliable cases are uninteresting, and in the interesting cases are unreliable. Carl Sagan.
Very true.
Next thing I know, I'm on my ass.